Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, John McCure and Julia Fellow.
Hey, coming up, more on the Miz, more on what happens in the second half for the Brewers, more on some pretty cool moments from the All-Star game and one that was actually awful. But first,
this is the 5 o'clock focus on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
All right, the top story is that today is the day, the last reporting date for campaign finances before the election. So what that means is today is the day where candidates need to report how much money they raised in the past 6 months, how much they've spent, and how much they have on hand. This has become very interesting because Sarah Rodriguez told everybody that she had $1.2 million and about a week ago is going to start buying TV ads, and then held a news conference where she said, actually, we double counted donations, we undercounted expenditures, and now we only have like $200,000.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
But she's going to spend $1 million in just TV ads?
And she didn't run the ads that she had told the whole world that she was going to run, although now there are reports that ads on her behalf will begin to run coming up here. So here we sit right now. The candidates have until midnight to turn in their numbers and to report all of that to us. Kelda Royce was with us, and she said, well, none of us will really do that before the deadline because there's no reason to, and we don't want the other people to know our business. I'm paraphrasing is what she said. So we don't have an update on any numbers from any of the candidates specifically, except Tom Tiffany has put out a press release. He's a Republican who does have an opponent, believe it or not, but someone who nobody knows. His name's Andy
Mansky, and
who literally has $0.
It's sad. Yeah, he hasn't even filed, like, in January any money that he's raised. So it's Tom Tiffany, okay? And Tom Tiffany says he's raised about $8 million.
That's right. During the last reporting cycle, $10 million total. Tiffany says that he has $3 million cash on hand because of that $8 million raised recently. He has spent a lot of it on commercials. His commercials are on TV now. They're all over the place. I saw Mandela Barnes commercials on TV. Tomorrow, we're in the process of having all the candidates on, all the candidates for governor on the show. We had Joel Brennan yesterday. Kelda Royce, you'll hear from her coming up here at 5:45. Francesca Hong is with us live tomorrow. I've been texting back and forth with Mandela Barnes' campaign. I think he'll be with us the next few days. And then Sarah Rodriguez, as you can imagine, is not doing any interviews right now.
We're trying.
We will keep you updated on what those numbers actually show, too. We'll keep that updated for you. WTMJ.com, you can always find the numbers there as well.
5:15 on WTMJ. Weeks after flames tore through a generations-old school on the south side of Milwaukee, a lot of questions still remain on the future of Lincoln Avenue School. It was built in 1917, now a total loss. When calls came pouring in from people spotting the fire at about 3 in the morning June 30th, the roof collapsed and then the three floors collapsed. It was a five-alarm fire, and there's still the cause is not known, according to Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky. Last week, the building was designated as historical, now approved by the Historical Society for demolition, total demolition. And just last night, the second listening session on the future of Lincoln Avenue schools with Milwaukee Public Schools Superintendent Brenda Casellas took place. This will affect 500 students alone. So many people came to the indoor basketball court at the Boys and Girls Club. They hugged each other, reuniting with each other, many for the first time since the fire. Many people so passionate. One person asking Dr. Brenna Casellas if it will be rebuilt.
What I've heard from the community so far is that they'd love to see it go right back up again, be part of that design process. However, I don't want to go on some things that I don't know.
Isn't the audio terrible? Sorry.
It is. That's rough.
It was really bad.
But basically, she said, I will listen to what you have to say, but I don't want to commit to anything right
about
now.
About new designs and... Yeah. But she can't commit. So, but it is going to be raised. So at least there's not going to be dangerous chemicals and rubble that's going to be taking place. What is the future itself? Leaders say they came to the conclusion of Pulaski High School 2 miles away because there's already an entire wing of the school that's now vacant after a charter school just left. And she says current students would not need to re-enroll and busing would be same for the students. There were four other options, including moving to a vacant school. It's vacant right now, owned by the city, 65th Street School. But the superintendent, Dr. Brenda Casellia, says that's too far from the community. The one Pulaski High School is located at that has separate doors, separate areas, indoor, outdoor, which is what is ideal set up for this situation, is about 2 miles from where Lincoln Avenue School is right now. There's no new update on the cause of the fire. And Wisconsin's Afternoon News will be going in-depth on the future of Lincoln Avenue School later this month. John, Adam Roberts, and myself will bring you a full hour dedicated to the future of this school that had incredibly deep meaning to our community and generations of families who went there. There were also no working sprinklers in Lincoln Avenue School. It was grandfathered in, not to be required to install, because it was built back in 1917. So we'll be covering that.
That sprinkler part still makes me sad. And I understand now it costs millions and tens of millions of dollars to install sprinklers in Milwaukee Public Schools. But imagine if this had happened in the middle of the school day.
Oh,
I mean,
no, I don't want to.
For these schools not to have sprinklers is a scary, scary thing. So July 28th, we will go in depth. We'll look at all the different angles. We're hoping to have the superintendent here, hoping to have the fire chief here, a little history of what happened and all of that good stuff.
MLB All-Star Game was last night in Philly, and what an incredible start. A wonderful announcement of our All-Star Brewers. Here's William Contreras and Jacob Mizorowski both announced.
Yes!
Brewers catcher William Contreras. And the Miz, Jacob Mizorowski.
Is that you?
That's me.
How fun.
I'm so excited. I scared my dog. It was amazing. I tweeted out that video because it was hosted in Philadelphia. It played right into America's 250th birthday. And as each of the starters then came out afterwards, they grabbed a feathered pen and put their signature on a rolled out document, which looked like the Declaration of Independence. It was truly special. The Miz still has a tired arm, so he is there not playing. William Contreras entered the game defensively as a catcher in the top of the fourth. There was a red carpet beforehand. There's always a red carpet, John.
Yeah.
And on the red carpet, the Miz had the cutest suit. Jacob Mizorowski had a photo of his dog, Ember. Do you see it?
Oh.
It's a little chihuahua, long-haired chihuahua, yeah, in the lining of his suit jacket. Text watch if you would like to see it. It's kind of the color of your corgis. Is that called brindle or what is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we call it fawn. But
he looks fun.
That's very cute.
Adorable.
Text watch and you can see it.
Well, I already like him. I just now love him because that's so cute. And also, who would be easier to get a hit on? Aroldis Chapman or Jacob Mizorowski? There's baseball content creators all over. And they posed this question to some of the all-stars at yesterday's game. Players like Freddie Freeman, Corbin Carroll, even Brewers catcher William Contreras chimed in.
Chapman.
I mean, the obvious answer would be the righty.
I don't think I'd have much success at all. I haven't had any success against Jacob yet.
It's like an impossible question, I feel like.
Maybe I just pick Jacob just because he's right-handed. I don't know.
Chapman, I got Mizorowski almost every week, and it's hard to catch it. But I think Chapman is a little bit easy.
Chapman is the flamethrower. Chapman, 4 years ago, I'd say Miz.
I mean, the honest answer is neither, but like, I guess I'll take the righty. That might be a little bit of an easier time for me.
I faced them both this year, and I got a hit off Chapman, and I did not get a hit off Mizorowski.
I don't want to face any of them, but the left on left is a little bit tougher at 105.
That's fun.
That's fun. Man, those are all the best players in the game. That's pretty cool.
For those who don't know or remember Aroldis Chapman, he was the first pitcher in MLB history to hit 105 on the radar gun back in 2010, with his velocity peaking at 105.8 September of 2010. Chapman still holds the number one and two spots for fastest pitches in MLB history, with Mizorowski right on his tail with third fastest pitch, 105.5. And the Miz has said he believes he could touch 106. He said that while being interviewed at the All-Star Game. So only time will tell if he'll dial it up.
Fastest for a starting pitcher. The reliever comes in, right, and he's got to throw like seven pitches. I mean, for a starting pitcher who might throw seven innings, that's incredible.
You know, also in my video, when the Miz showed up and they announced also Contreras, I also wrote in my caption how Jennifer Hudson brought down the house. What an incredible singer.
She did. So she sang America the Beautiful. Listen to this little snippet. This is really, really great. Jennifer Hudson singing America the Beautiful. I loved how you described the signing of the Declaration, the red, white, and blue everywhere, the pageantry, all of that stuff. So that was America the Beautiful. On social media, everyone heralded that. Everybody said, my goodness, that was incredible. That was powerful. That was really cool. You know what else happened on social media? Everybody said, Patti LaBelle's national anthem. Wow, did you hear that? Because it was the opposite of incredible. Patti LaBelle singing the national anthem. I don't even know if you can call this singing.
What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, those broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight.
Okay, we did her a favor because there were parts of that song that were even worse.
You are so savage.
Well, here's what I think. I think if you're going to sing the national anthem, that is not the song to take creative liberties with. I think it is our national anthem, and it should be sung a certain way, sung with respect. And I respect her. I actually like her music, and she's like 80 years old and has had a lot of really good big hits. But don't mess around with the national anthem. They should have just had Jennifer Hudson sing both of
them. Totally!
Because she's amazing.
My husband told me to stop hating on Patti LaBelle. He was watching next to me. He was defending Patti LaBelle.
I don't know if your husband needs to get his hearing checked. So the race for governor has changed. You've been following the news along with us the past couple of days that Sarah Rodriguez's campaign apparently doesn't know where the money went, did not record correctly how much money came in. She held a press conference, and it's just kind of gotten worse from there. Senator Kelderoys is one of the candidates for governor, and she is with us in the studio. Senator, thank you so much for being here.
I'm so delighted to be with you.
So part of the statement you put out said, the public is getting far too familiar with hearing Sarah Rodriguez apologize. This recurring pattern shows that Rodriguez is unprepared for the rigors of a general election or governing. Should Sarah Rodriguez drop out of this race?
That is not for me or anyone besides her to say, but I can say that we need to focus on how we are going to beat Tom Tiffany and deliver a Democratic legislature, and then most importantly, actually bring the change that Wisconsinites need.
She is your lieutenant governor, our lieutenant governor. Should she step down as lieutenant governor?
I don't think that is makes any difference. I actually hadn't thought about that whatsoever. I think that she's obviously working through what she's going to do, but I am really focused on what is my path to win this race, because I am the strongest candidate to beat Tom Tiffany. And that is has to be our whole goal here as Democrats.
It's clear that you're familiar with what happened with her campaign. We all are, right? If you read the news, you're familiar with it. Do you believe it was a series of innocent mistakes? Do you think it could have been something more serious?
Listen, I don't want to speculate on that, but I can tell you that in January, when I looked at everybody's finance report, it didn't take me but 5 minutes to know that there was something really wrong with that report because there were so many duplicates on it. It was obvious. It was evident. And as somebody who has run a small business for 13 years during tough times and good times, I ran a statewide nonprofit for 4 years. I have served on the Joint Finance Committee. I have run 5 campaigns. I cannot imagine not having basic financial safeguards in place where you are checking your bank account balance, maybe not every day, but God, once a week, once a month, where you are making sure that there are multiple people that are involved in every step so that there is oversight, so that if somebody makes a mistake, to say nothing of other challenges, you are catching it. This is so important. You know, voters have the right to know how much candidates are raising and spending. That is one of the hallmarks of our campaign finance system. This is one reason we should have public financing for campaigns, so that, we know that our politicians aren't bought and paid for. But at the end of the day, this has got to be right.
So how is your ledger? What have you raised? Because I don't see it posted yet.
No, so I actually put out a release last week saying that I've raised $1.2 million. And, you know, that is money that has been raised in this campaign into my account and also into an independent expenditure on my behalf. And obviously, now that we are in a completely different place in this race, our fundraising trajectory has changed markedly. And there's obviously quite a lot more interest in supporting my campaign because people realize the stakes. We cannot have a nominee who could lose to Tiffany. We need a nominee who can win, who can govern, someone that we can actually trust to deliver for us.
I want to ask you another question about the money, because I think it's too simplistic to look at the number that's reported as being raised, because when you're at different places in your campaign, you might be spending money. Joel Brennan spent money early because nobody knew who he was. You're spending money on TV ads, so it's not the same amount that you could just have sitting in the bank.
Right.
Can you talk about the numbers and which numbers we should look at to really determine strengths in a campaign?
Well, I think you want to look at, you know, first of all, how candidates raise their money, because that tells you a lot about how they're going to govern. I'm really proud that 93% of my contributions, my money, is coming from Wisconsin donors. And, you know, the other 7% is basically friends and family from outside. I was one of the first candidates in the country back in 2011 to say, I'm not going to fund my campaigns with corporate PAC dollars. I've got a policy on my website that states that. I've never taken APAC money. I'm not backed by AI or crypto industries. My money is coming from grassroots donors who care about the state and who live here. And that's very different from how some of the other campaigns are raising their money.
I'm going to ask you a question that I asked Joel Brennan yesterday, who's also running for governor, Democratic side. You know, I'm about the drama. I love this. This is the best part of politics. But it turns a lot of people off. And from what I saw from his news release and from what you're talking about, there's no talk of substance of why you should be governor. We're just talking about Sarah Rodriguez and how she screwed up. So do you think that this is turning people off to even going to the polls and voting for you?
I think that when people feel like they can't trust their political leaders, it absolutely does turn people off. And I will, you know, point out that I have very detailed plans for what I'm actually going to deliver for Wisconsinites. But we haven't even talked about that yet. I'm going to deliver higher wages for people, more money in your pocket. We're going to deliver lower costs on the big ticket items like housing and health care, child care and utilities. We're going to fully fund public education so that every child in the state gets a great, top-notch public education. And I'm going to protect our rights and freedoms from Donald Trump. And those are the hallmarks of my campaign and the vision that I have for making Wisconsin a place where everyone can thrive.
Senator Kelda Royce is with us. She's a gubernatorial candidate. All right, so let's talk about another issue. You voted against a $1.8 billion tax cut in school funding bill negotiated by Republicans and Democrats, leaders in those parties. Marquette polls shortly after that, Senator, showed that 80% of Wisconsinites said legislators should have passed that bill. 80%. We can't get 80% of people to agree that the word Wisconsin begins with a W.
Well, that's a big number. We can get 80% of people to agree that the decision about abortion should remain between a woman and her doctor.
Well, let's stick with this.
Let's stick with this.
80% said that this should have passed. Do you represent those voters? Why did you vote no when so many Wisconsinites wanted a yes vote?
I voted no because it was incredibly fiscally irresponsible, and that was not included in the poll. Now, if somebody asked me, hey, would you like $300? Yes, I would. I'm a human being and money is helpful. I've got, you know, five kids and stepkids. Money is great. But the question really should have been, is it worth giving a tiny bit of money to schools now, which they desperately need? I know that. I care deeply about public education, but only 20% of the money was for public schools. The other 80% was all Republican priorities. And the cost of that would have been, at the next budget, Wisconsin would have a nearly $3 billion deficit. So the question is, do you want $300 million for schools today and then deep cuts in a couple of years? Because I don't. That's not fiscally responsible. And I understand that, you know, Robin Voss was desperate for this deal so that he could try to make his members look like they haven't just spent decades jacking up your property taxes and defunding public education. He wants to hold on to his majority during a potential blue wave year. But my responsibility.
But it was your Democratic, it was the leader of your party who also negotiated this. It was
Democrat.
The Democratic governor.
Oh, that's true.
And Evers wanted it, right?
Right.
He did. Yeah. He absolutely did because he wanted the school funding piece, as did every Democrat. But rather than negotiate a deal that was right-sized where maybe each side gets half of what they want, he negotiated a deal where 80% of it was Republican priorities that would have made it impossible for Democrats to actually permanently solve the problem of property tax relief and funding public schools. Now, listen, I am not elected to just do what Marquette polls say. I am elected to do the right thing for Wisconsinites, even when it's hard. And I think that Wisconsin voters value that leadership. They value that independent thought. And that's a big difference between me and Tom Tiffany. Tiffany will do whatever Trump wants. He's a rubber stamp. I think for myself. And sometimes that means I work with my Democratic colleagues very often. But it also means that I've been willing to work with Republicans again and again over more than 20 years to actually pass bills to make people's lives better. And I think that's something Wisconsinites want.
But it's interesting because you and Tom Tiffany agree on this issue. He also didn't want this.
And we both like old fashions. But only one of us is the independent thinker that Wisconsin deserves as governor.
I want to ask you about the straw poll at the Democratic convention. The last time you ran, you did very well in the straw poll. I think you could probably correct me, but I think you finished first in the straw polls. Is that right?
I did.
The last time around. This time.
And that tells you how valuable straw polls are.
Yeah, that's part of my question. This time you finished third in the straw poll. A Wedgwood poll released 10 days ago. It only listed the top three. So you weren't in the top three. My question related to that. Those are things that happened in the past. What are you seeing now with the news of the past couple of days?
Yeah, and we don't actually know what that poll even said. The truth is that there has actually been no public polling in this race. There has been no public polling, and this we know is going to be a very late-breaking race. Most Wisconsinites do not even know that there is an election happening in a month. They don't even know about it yet. And so as folks start to pay attention and look at the candidates, they are seeing our campaign surging because folks want to make sure we have a nominee that we can trust. Someone who can unite all the different voters in the party, everybody from young people who are so disaffected with the status quo, and rightly so, and want real change, to lifelong Democrats who just want a steady, competent adult that they can trust, to folks who voted for Trump but are now seeing how harmful that's been and realizing that he screwed them over. I'm the candidate that can unite them all, and that's why we are betting on, as Wisconsinites, pay attention, my campaign will pick up steam.
How much do you weigh people that support you or back you? Because Jesse O'Poin with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel just tweeted about 39 minutes ago that you are picking up major support from former backers Rodriguez, Crawley, and Hughes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's wonderful. Listen, we started out with a really great crop of folks running for governor. Over time, that has whittled down, and I'm doing my best to earn every single vote. I want to earn the votes of Democrats, independents, and even fair-minded Republicans, and I am proud to be the candidate that has earned by far the most endorsements in this race. And that is one of the proof points about where Wisconsinites are going to be. Most folks are not paying attention, but the ones who are choosing me. And that is exactly what we need if we're going to unite and beat Tom Tiffany and hopefully deliver a Democratic legislature.
Senator Kel DeRoy's Democratic candidate for governor. You're very busy. We appreciate you joining us in the studio. Thank you.
Great to see you again. Thank you.